Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day, everybody, and welcome to the Draft Doctors. It's Jono here. I am back from my holidays, and just like the WWE, we're doing a super tag in here. I am in. Steve is out, as apparently he has moved to the country, and they do not know what fast-speed internet is. There's some guy cranking the handle out in the bush wherever he is, so he'll be back online next week, hopefully, to rejoin us for the show. And I hear, gentlemen, that the railroad will be completing by the turn of the century out there, so good news if you need to get to the country. But it is our trick-or-treat show. The show will be dropping on Halloween night itself, so this show is basically those players who's going to be a treat for us next year, whether they've had a change of club, positional change, role change or whatever, that it's going to give them that boost, and the trick, those people who there might be a bit of a hype about, but is just going to burn you when you do draft them. And as usual, we have the Statesman. Welcome to you.
Unfortunately, Mrs. Statesman has listened to a few of the podcasts, so my Halloween treat is a kitchen renovation, so no nights or weekends off for the next month or so. So shouldn't bag her as probably as much as I do.
And we welcome to you, Mr. Cam McLaughlin. How are you?
Yeah, doing quite well, thanks. And I'll tell you what, Halloween, it's starting to get pretty big around here. But the bigger it gets, the weirder it gets. And the more I see people doing Fortnite dances in the street, and I'm just not keen. I don't like Fortnite, I don't like what it represents, I don't like what the dances are, and I am just tagging out of Halloween for the year.
It's like a grudge, it's only a place to park your car. A fortnight's just 14 days.
No. We come out from that rock back in the 18th century. Fortnite is probably, arguably, the most popular game on the planet. You're a gamer, Cam, would you agree on that?
I would agree, but I would also agree that the majority of the population that's playing it is under 8. So, Jono, if you're getting lots of kills in Fortnite, you're just crushing those sub-10-year-olds.
Good. It's the only way I'm going to do it. Do it legally. Beat those children legally.
Jeez. Okay.
Okay, moving on. It is our trick-or-treat show, and to kick us off, the Statesman, who have you got there as your first treat?
Well, as the treats come, I don't reckon they're going to be much better than this, because my treat is Callum Mills. Not only are we expecting to see this young man break out in his fourth season, and I will state they're a little bit overdue after his 72 average in his first year, but the Swans are now going through some changes. Obviously, with Dan Hand gone and also Newman, who was in the midfield mix this year, they are looking for some people to step up in that revamped midfield. The best man to be added to their midfield will be Callum Mills. So expect him to be a 85-90 averaging defender as a treat. F2 at the cost of an, should I say D2, for the cost of a D5. If you suggest that others will get the role, just remember that Sydney did not trade to replace Dan Hand or Newman. They traded for halfback flankers in Ryan Clark and Jackson Thurlow. So they've gone for that, okay, we're going to replace and square up defence. And that means that the class of Callum Mills can actually hop into that midfield group. I'm being quite conservative with the 85-90, and we're only talking about a 15-point step up, but I think it could actually be quite large, to be honest. But let's be conservative on this. An F2 for the value, an F5, I think, is very much, sorry, D. Two for D5 is very much a treat.
Oh, it would be a treat if he did get forward status, but
yes,
I do agree. I do see the clear path of Callum Mills. We did see it earlier in his career before he did get that injury, that he was the man likely touted to go to that midfield role. But do you see players like a Hewitt, a Florent, maybe going ahead of him, or a bit more rotation between the three of them, or he's the standout candidate for that midfield time?
I think there's going to be quite a few that go through that midfield rotation. There's no doubts about that. But this man's been touted to be in the midfield for quite a while. They really haven't had the quality to go in defence. Now they have. Mm. Obviously, they've got a bit of a task when they're looking at key backs, but Callum's never going to fit into that. So he'll head into that sort of midfield row. Doesn't mean he won't get defensive time and rotation as well, and that'll be handy if he can keep his defender status.
Do you think he'll be ready come round one?
Oh, absolutely.
Good one.
Yeah, fourth season. Obviously, we know that he's coming off an injury this year, but he's been pretty solid bar that injury. I think he'd be fine, right to go.
Where would you be looking to draft him next year?
Well, obviously, in the it gets linked to your averages, so he's actually going to be reasonably low. It depends. The thing here will be his JLT form. So if he starts JLT in a midfield rotation and is racking up points, then he's going to go early because he's got defender status. But if he's just slowly building up after his injury, then I'll actually think you'll get him in the mid-teens.
Yeah, fair enough. That's where I'd be looking to grab him as well.
As far as treats go, he's probably, I'd say, a Snickers. I think that's probably fair.
Yep.
Good one.
He's a bit nutty, yeah.
Yeah.
Who have you got there for your first treat there, Cam?
Well, actually, my treat is Wayne Miller. So,
not George Hall and Smith?
So I'm not allowed to say that name. And so I didn't say it, but you did. And so I will avoid all sorts of Steve bashings. So Wayne Miller, this year, for starters, he can seriously play. Like, if you look at his highlights online, he is going to be an absolute star at the Crows. And he can seriously run as well. He's got a massive tank. And he's shown that playing off both the halfback and across the wing through the year. 2018 was his third year in the seniors, and he kind of hadn't really bed down a lasting spot. He kind of was a role player for the first couple of years, whereas this year I kind of feel like he really started to get his real true position, which is sort of that rebounding defender through the mid. And something that really caught my eye is sort of his last seven games. So regardless of format, say in if you want to run AFL Fantasy or Supercoach, his last seven games are mighty impressive. So he's gone 89.14 in AFL Fantasy across the last seven, and a whopping 95.4 in Supercoach. Now, when you think about where he's probably going to be drafted, he may end up being on the waivers. He may miss drafts completely, right? So this is where, as far as someone who will likely keep a dual position. This year he was mid-forward. He will likely be mid-defender next year. But will, I would suggest, keep a dual position. Those scores, if he can pump out anything like that, are a brilliant, brilliant late draft pickup. That's slotting into your, you know, D3 or, you know, forward three, regardless of, you know, depending on which one he actually keeps. So I'm pumped for his season next year.
I think my biggest question is going to be the positioning. So if he's named as a mid only, that's when he becomes a bit of a drama. But look, I've been hot on him for a while. I think Jono, the season before last, I think he was my pick for the rising star.
Certainly
so he's
was.
Definitely got some quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially with Brody Smith coming towards the end of his career and body issues and the seeds out of that defensive and push to the wing, then that position's, he made it his own. But our only concern with him is, do we get sucked into that last, what was it, seven rounds form that we saw with Lukey Dunstan, was it the end of last year? So definitely one to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Ryan Clark did the same thing.
Exactly right.
Correct. And with the Brody Smith thing, so a lot of my big hesitation was, well, what's his output going to be when Brody Smith is back in the team? And then when Brody Smith was back for the last you know, couple of games of the year, he pumped out a ton and a 90. You know, it's not bad.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting, especially with all these new positional changes and rule changes and that. So it'll be interesting to see that set up. My first treat is the one and the only smoking Jesse Hogan. He's been traded to the Freo Dockers. And you think, well, he's just going to be parked in that forward 50 line and not get much of the ball inside there because Freo are pretty crap as a team. But you look at it at their actual lineup, they've got Rory Lobb into that team as well. And a bloke who got injured pretty early in the season in Matty Tabner, who was actually playing some pretty good footy before he went down. So if Ross the Boss uses Tabner and Lobb in that forward 50 with Lobb, obviously going to rotate as Ruckman with either Darcy or Sandy Lands. That means Jesse Hogan's going to be that roaming centre-half forward that we saw the one and only Matty Pavlich used to play. So I can see Jesse Hogan, there's a clear path to him increasing his marks and possessions. His goals will probably stay the same, you would think. Just a bit of a comparison from Hogan and Pavlich. In Pavlich's All-Australian year in 2007, he was averaging 17 possessions, 9 marks, and almost 3.5 goals a game. This year, Hogan averaged 18 possessions, 6 marks, and 2.5 goals a game. So if the Freo boys are getting the ball to Hogan and Hogan's kicking inside 50, his marks are obviously going to go up and average similar. Now, in those years, Pavlich averaged 110 in Supercoach and just under the ton in AFL Fantasy. While I don't think Hogan's going to get those massive numbers, he can go close to the 100 in Supercoach and mid to high 90s in AFL Fantasy, where we did see him average 91 in Supercoach and AFL Fantasy this year. And also with the new rules, I think he gets more time on ground. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not convinced on Hogan. I just need to see how they're set up. I understand your theory moving up the ground, but I reckon Fremantle's biggest worry is being able to put a score on a board, and Hogan's the one that kicked goals. So Rory Lobb's probably done it twice in his career. Tabernard's done it a few times. Sorry, has it been twice in his career?
It might have been three times. I think it was three.
Right, there you go. Wasn't that harsh. But Hogan can. He can score. And I think that's been their biggest drama. So I've just got the sneaky suspicion that with the new rules and structure that he's going to be the one that's always within the 30 metres of goal. And that is just going to reduce his marks, his possessions, his tackling pressure as well, although we'll get the bonuses for the goals. But as we know, Fremantle's midfield is an unknown quantity right now. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I just don't know where to draft him. And he's either going to be one of the best bargains of the year or someone's going to go early on him and make a mistake.
So speaking of which, so, Jono, two questions. One, how much bigger can he go? If you think he's a treat, how much bigger can he go this next year? Given that he was, I think, 89-ish in AFL Fantasy. Yeah. And two, when would you draft him?
Well, if you listen to what I said he can go mid to high 90s in AFL Fantasy and close to the ton in Supercoach, but that's fine. I'd be looking at him.
And we just need to clarify, we never listen to what you say, John.
That's right, no one does, so that's fine. I'm just talking to myself every episode. That's fine. In regards to where I draft him, ideally as an F, I reckon you can get him an F3 value. F3 value is where it's at. I'd like some security in front of him, but he can certainly just go monster. We know he can score, so F3 is where I'm looking at him.
He's going to be better at that other game, isn't he?
Supercoach, definitely. He's good on the contested mark, so more points for the contested mark.
See, I was looking at contested mark with Jesse Hogan for one of the other shows, and I was like, is he a contested marking beast or not? And so this year he's gone 24 marks contested for the entire season. I actually don't know if is that good?
That's good. Pavlich was actually averaging less in his heydays. So
okay, good.
He's better than Pavlich when it comes to the contested mark. The only thing that was stopping him this year taking more contested marks, he was carrying the injuries a bit, and I suppose with the new push in the back rules, there's more chance to get free kicks and kick goals as well. So those are little bonuses there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well for Smoke and Jesse Hogan.
Good one.
Moving on now to the tricks, where we can lay in the boots in a little bit to some of those players. Who have you got there, Statesman?
Well, I just had to line up Geelong Football Club. I had to go there. Lukey Dalhouse. Geelong need forward pressure. Geelong already have way too many midfielders, and they're sharing it around, and there's certain players this year, like Mitch Duncan, that were hurt by it. There were several others that were reasonably good quality, and some not to be ever named again, couldn't get a game in their midfield that had so many midfielders. So when we look at them, we're looking at Selwood, we're looking at Danger, we're looking at Ablett, we're looking at Duncan, we're looking at the other Selwood, we're looking at Kelly, who didn't free up some space, Menegola, Golf Run, as we now know him, Guthrie, Cunico, are all ahead of him to play midfield time. Now, some of those are inside, some of those are outside. Plus, Cam goes for Geelong, so really the line is, enough said.
And that's all we need to say. Cam, who's your trick, mate?
I feel like I'm just straight through the heart, mate. And I can't even retort on this because I've been, you know, hashtag censored for the show, and so,
but well, Steve's not here. He doesn't know what's going on.
I copped a little bit of flack from mates Brennan and Co on Twitter about diversifying, so I'm just going to stay out of it. I think I've said my piece on Dalhouse, and we'll go from there.
Well, you
Jono, your thoughts?
Oh, look, he dug his biggest hole when he said, it's a Monty that Tim Kelly's going to West Coast. Yeah, how did that work out?
I just can't believe it didn't happen. Oh.
Yeah, anyway. No interest in Luke Dalhouse whatsoever. He'll be a 65 to 70 averaging forward next year, and that's about it.
Yeah, and I think he'll play a really important role for Geelong.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think he's going to play a fantasy role. At least one thing you know, he's actually going to a club which we know what role he's going to play, Jono.
Oh, exactly right. It's actually good for him. So it's good for real football, but not for fantasy football.
All right. I'm willing to put a six-pack on the line, and I'll ship it down to Tasmania if they actually, you know, have couriers down there, but...
Six-pack of Pinot, and you don't ship it down here. You order it from here to arrive to my place.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll give you a line of 85. You can go under.
You think he's going to
average 85.
You go under. I'll go 85 and above.
Yep. Not a worry. We're talking AFL fantasy, of course.
Of course.
Just get him to order that not Pinot from Hong Kong, where the price of a Rawson's Retreat Cab Sav 2018 was $30 Australian, so make sure you get some quality peanut from Hong Kong.
As long as he's not after a Grand Cru, I think I'll be okay.
That's all he drinks. What are you talking about? All right, who have you got there for your treat there, Cam? Cam.
So, the fella I'm going to talk about... firstly... I feel like he's got multiple layers of trickery. So the first layer is Tinder. If this guy's on Tinder, if he rocked up to a date, the person on the receiving end would assume they've been catfished. I'm talking about the one and only Ed Curnow. He is not a good looking man. So that's one level of trickery, but from a second level of trickery, it's a tale of two halves for his season this year in regards to the first half of the season. He was rocketing along at an average in AFL fantasy of 118.3, which is massive, and 114.5 Supercoach. But then from round 11 onwards, and I did you know, a little bit over halfway to make it seem a little bit better for him, but he ended up scoring 87 average AFL fantasy and 92 super coach. Okay, so he's basically had a complete rocket first half and a complete downside on the second half. And there was really, there's probably one reason for that. So Mark Murphy sort of came back mid to late through the season and played out the last 10 games or so of the year. And so that saw a role shift for Ed Curnow back to his preferred and team's preferred tagging role. Whereas previously he was sort of seen as, you know, tag if we have to, but also play a powerful midfielder. Because he's built like it. He's a big, big midfielder. The reason I think he's a massive trick is that he actually managed to maintain an average over 100, even though in that back half of the season he sort of dropped off. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who don't pay attention to the previous year's scores individually, and they see it as a collective. And come draft time, all they're going to see is that he was the 31st overall averaging player in the league. Right? And that's tied with Joel Selwood, by the way. But that, to me, basically says that someone's going to take him far too early. Because I actually think he's going to go back to what he scored historically for Carlton, and it's usually about 85 to 90 as a mid, and that's garbage. Like, you basically aren't drafting that even an M7. You'd be a little bit harsh to pick that up. I'd prefer a speculative in that position rather than that sort of output. And that's it. I think someone's going to pick him up too early, and it's going to be their downfall.
We were certainly a treat this year. So his ADP was 137. So to have a 100 averaging midfielder picked up at round 13, 14 is pretty impressive. As you hit out, the two halves of the year were dramatically different. And I think, especially in salary cap discussions, people saw him as a trap. And there's no doubt, because of the average, that he'll get picked up earlier than the 137 mark. And I think that's a bit of a trick for those inexperienced at drafting, to be honest. If you get him really late, he's going to have some boom games. He does every year. He has a very high ceiling when he plays the right role. But at the end of the day, I agree with you. He's a trick.
Yeah, totally agree. The only way I'm picking him is if you can handcuff him with a Mark Murphy, who we know gets injured at the bite of a mosquito. So if you get Mark Murphy pretty early or in the middle rounds and you get Curnow at the end, then you'd be pretty happy with that, because you know Mark Murphy is probably going to miss some games throughout the year.
Those mosquitoes down at Carlton are the size of houses, mate. They get right into you.
It's the Carlton crew that have been in jail just building up in the gym, and yeah, they're coming back with a right return. Right, my last trick. I am not picking this guy at all. I would rather go to sleep on Elm Street and fight Freddy Krueger than pick this guy. My trick is the one and only Aaron Hall. Now, everyone said he has moved to North Melbourne. He's a fantasy scoring beast. Yes, we know that. But... when I look at drafting players, I look at a clear path to where their scoring score build comes from. And we know that Aaron Hall, yes, he gathers the ball, but he doesn't tackle, he doesn't kick goals. And quite frankly, I don't know if he's actually going to be playing in that midfield to get that 25 averaging possessions a game. Because you've got blokes like Cunnington, Jacobs, Higgins, Ahern, Jermont, LDU, all there. Where is he actually going to fit into that midfield? So do they chuck him down back? And they also got a bloke by the name of Jared Pollock. So they're not going to chuck him on the wing, because they gave up a pretty penny to get Pollock into that team to play that running wingman. So not overly confident on Aaron Hall, especially from a bloke who's played 103 of 154 games, with the most games he's played way back in 2013, so has missed a lot of games since then. The only thing going for him is his time on ground is pretty solid at 80%, but no, I'm going to Camp Crystal for a swim before I pick Aaron Hall.
So first things first, great Halloween references. It was about time there was at least one on the show.
It had to be.
So brilliant. And second thing, we were discussing this just before the show, Jono. I was so close to having Aaron Hall as a treat for a completely different reason. So all of the question marks are adding up for me. And every single question mark, and it's not just my mind, I think it's probably draft coaches, you know, country over, are adding these question marks up. And every time it pushes him further and further down the draft order. And that for me means that he's probably going to be sitting at the top of the pile for a long time. And you're going to get value on him. And it's, sure, it's speculation, right? I think it's a speculative pick. But if he starts hitting the ceilings of 3 years ago, that is, you've picked him up at M6 or 7, and all of a sudden you've got a bang M3.
But he'll only play 6 games for you, though.
But those 6 games are going to be so sweet.
But that'll be at the start of the year. He'll get 12 Brownlow votes in the first, what, 4 rounds, and you'll never be seen again. And I just, where is his role defined in that North Melbourne team? It's just, I need to wait for JLT before I make a decision, but it is a big trick for me. I know everyone's banging on their drums about him, but everyone was banging on their drums about Darcy Parrish this year, and look how much that failed. So,
good one. Fair call.
I will stand on Aaron Hall, do not draft Hill till I die. Statesman, you have a look of rage in your face there.
No, not at all. He's a risk-reward pick. It depends on role. It also depends on positional status too. He certainly looked like he found himself a wonderful old halfback flank for the Gold Coast before his injury. Now, whether that's going to impact his positional status, I'm unsure. It's probably not enough data for them, but we'll wait and see. But, yeah, look, I'll pick him up late, but it's a risk-reward.
Mm. Oh, certainly I'll be looking. If you can get him late, get him late. But, yeah, just too much dramas for me, for Aaron Hall. And while he may not be on the show, Steve did send through his tricks and treats for the show. And kicking it off, his treat was Rory Sloan this year. Didn't give us too much info, but Cam, you seem pretty hot on Rory Sloan. So tell us why you think he's going to be a treat this year.
The main thing is he averaged well under what he's used to averaging. So not only did he cop he was injured most of the year, and then when he came back, he got tagged a couple of times. He, you know, probably never hit his peak, and he pumped out an average of like 89 from memory, which is, you know, well below what we're expecting of Mr. Sloan. I'm big on him because of where you'll be able to draft him next year. So it's more about, I think he'll probably go back to an average of 100, but I don't. I think you'll probably pick him up at maybe round 6-ish, because there's so many good options before him at the moment. He probably doesn't have much of a medical question mark over his head. I think that's probably passed with the amount of time that he had off this year. It's only the tag issue that he will still have next year. But I'm big on him, and I reckon he can go 100 next year.
Yeah, I've always been a Sloan fan, so yeah, looking forward to it. I think still just needs a bit more help in that midfield, because those Crouch boys, well, we know Matt's okay, but Brad, super unreliable, so see how it plays out. And for the trick, you could probably throw a blanket over any one of these players in this team's midfield, but Steve's gone with Steele's side bottom as a trick, and I was looking at a few players from the Collingwood team as who could be a trick. I was even looking at Scotty Pendlebury as another potential as well. It's just going to be so interesting to see how this plays out, and I can see where Steve's gone with the side bottom pick, because he'll be pushed out maybe to a half forward flank. They've got players like Sire, Adams, Treloar coming back after that injury, and Beams. So I totally agree with Steve that, yeah, side bottom's the one to be pushed out, and we did see him, would have been a few years ago now, that he had that forward status and was actually okay, but the year before that, as that forward, he was no good.
So my biggest point with Steele is that he almost won the Brownlow medal playing inside mid. He was very close up until like the last three rounds. He was leading the count. Is he really the person that... Yeah, me too. Devastation, but, you know, is he really the person you take out? He's probably the second best midfielder per this year in the comp. Is he the person you push out? Maybe not.
Statesman, what are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, I'm lost in the... I need to look and see. I'm really unsure what's going to happen at Collingwood. They're going to be a good side. They're going to be sharing a lot of points, but, you know, who's the one that gets and decreases? I think less likely, Sidey. To be honest, I think it's Pendlebury 1, Adams 2. That's my initial thoughts, but let's see how they end up lining up.
So you think either Adams or Pendles goes into a defensive, into the defence, or Pendles can push forward. He's a pretty good mark, so.
Yeah, and that's it's just a wait and see.
Yeah.
It really is with that list.
That wraps up the show for this week. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.